So it's the 24th of May, 2011. We're in Melbourne Yatra, and what I'm going to do is, if you just give me 1 minute, some of you will know that I travelled with Srila Prabhupada for about a year and a half in late 1975 up until March of 1977. And during that period, I was keeping a daily diary. So later on, I transformed that original few notes that I wrote into a book that's called The Transcendental Diary. There are 5 volumes so far, and hopefully there'll be 7 when we finish it. So what I've done is take various topics about devotional life, chanting, prasadam, cleanliness, health, etc. About 7 or 8 different topics, living in the Dham, deities. And whatever Prabhupada said or did on that particular topic, I've tried to compile that into some kind of order. And I present that as a series of seminars. So normally what I do is I invite the devotees in the temple that I'm visiting to choose the topic, but since I've already been, I had a week in Malaysia, and then I was up in Brisbane and New Govardhan, and then just in Sydney, so I've already done a few topics. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to just pick the topic myself, if you don't mind. And the topic that I thought would be good to talk about would be prasadam, if that's all right. Everybody likes prasadam. So something, you know, that Prabhupada said about prasadam, the importance of it, different kinds of prasadam pastimes, Prabhupada's cooking, etc., etc. This is not good. Okay, so if you just give me 1 second. Okay, so Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Okay, so of course that was one of Prabhupada's great gifts. As he said, or it may come up, Prabhupada often said that actually only in India do people know how to eat properly. Yeah, there's so many thousands of preparations that you can make from milk and combinations of grains and sabji or vegetables, rice. So Prabhupada's experience in traveling around the world was that prasadam was a very important aspect of the Krishna consciousness movement. You are what you eat. So if you're filling your belly up with dead animals and all rotten and, you know, horrible things, then naturally your state of consciousness can't be good. You have to be in at least in the mode of goodness to be able to understand anything about spiritual life. And prasadam, of course, is meant to not only bring us into the mode of goodness, it's meant to bring us onto the transcendental platform. There's ordinary eating and then there's spiritual eating. So Prabhupada introduced us to that concept of spiritual eating. Sometimes he called the Krishna consciousness movement the kitchen religion. Yeah. So we were in America in 1976. Prabhupada had his last world tour there. from May when we arrived in Hawaii for 1 month, and then on the 1st of June we arrived in Los Angeles. From Los Angeles we went to Detroit, from Detroit we went to Toronto, from Toronto we arrived in Pittsburgh on the 21st of June in 1976, and we were going to New Brindavan. So the devotees, of course, were there. Hare Krishna, how are you? Very nice to see you. It's my old friend, Mahatma. The devotees were there at the airport. Kirtananda Swami was in charge in those days. Of course, he was one of the first devotees to join the Krishna Consciousness Movement in 1966 at 26 Second Avenue. So we were immediately escorted to a car, and then we had a 90-minute drive to New Brindavan. The ride was comfortable, and as we progressed smoothly along the highway, Prabhupada kept up a running conversation. He reflected on the fallen condition of modern man, telling Kirtananda his comparison of the dogs running on four legs and man's running on four wheels. So that was an observation that he made when we were in Hawaii the month before. Every day we would, you know, go down from the hills where the temple was, and you go down a freeway, then we would go to a place called Magic Island, which is like a promontory on the seafront in Honolulu, and Prabhupada would walk around there, and then of course we would drive back after an hour in time to greet the deities. So Prabhupada, he was looking out the window and he was seeing all the cars, you know, zipping up and down the highway at what he called neck brake speed, and then he came up with this comparison. He said, what's the difference? Dogs are running around on four legs, they're running around on four wheels, but the business is the same. So now he was telling the same thing to Kirtananda. He said the only way to save them is to start with the basics, then after some time when they become a little purified, then you can give some philosophy. He reminded Kirtananda that this had been his program right from the beginning. You all got this experience, he told them. This is the only way. I started this movement on this determination. I'll give them prasadam, nice chanting, and they will not come. They must come. That was my determination. And I began with this. This is the only way. Give them a chance. No talk. Please come. Chant and dance with us and take Krishna prasadam and go home. So that was Prabhupada's formula. No talking, and whatever you're going to say will be all garbage anyway. Just eat, chant, and go home. And then after some time, when you get a little purified, you become capable of understanding the Krishna conscious philosophy. Kirtananda reflected that it was just 10 years ago since he had first met Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada gave one of his endearing little sideways nods of assent. Yes, I never said, you have to give up this, you have to do that. I never said. Then, gradually, chaito darpana marjanam. When the heart becomes cleansed, then a little philosophy. So there is no hopelessness. After a short while, Kirtananda produced some cartons of prasadam from the New Brindavan kitchens. Puri, sabji, samosa, various milk sweets. I thought Prabhupada would just try a morsel just to oblige the devotees. He often did that. Sometimes they would come out with big plates, you know, that 10 men could eat. And Prabhupada would take one sample and then he would have it distributed. So I thought he would do the same with, in this case, especially because we were in the car as well. But to our delight, he had me spread out the preparations and he took a little of everything. He enjoyed them and he encouraged us to take some. He praised Kirtananda as a good cook and he said, so this was my dream, that a place should be there where we can get all nice foods, best foods of milk. Krishna is fulfilling our desire. Everything is there. These rascals, they do not know how to live or to eat. Intelligence is there, everything is there, but simply for want of training, they have become rogues. So, make them into human beings, your countrymen. So, that's how you become civilized. It begins with the tongue, yeah? Eating proper foodstuffs. So, November 25th, 1975, this was just before I became Prabhupada's servant. I had been in Vrindavan for about 3 or 4 months. I was the temple commander there. Of course, the Vrindavan temple had just been opened at Ram Navami in 1975. And it was still a work in progress in many ways. Prabhupada came for 3 weeks at Janmashtami through Radhashtami. And he was, you know, particularly concerned about everything working properly. And, of course, he, in India especially, he always had big darshans. Wherever Prabhupada went, many, you know, as soon as the word got out, then many hundreds of people would come every day. And he would oblige them by giving a darshan in the afternoons. His general schedule in the morning times, because Prabhupada didn't really have a day and a night in the sense that, you know, we have a beginning of the day and then we have an end of the day and then we have a blank, you know, right? And then we wake up and then we go on again the next day. Prabhupada wasn't like that. They, you know, the days and nights all rolled into each other. So, but we can say, for the sake of argument, he started his day in the morning. He would take his bath, well, not a bath, but he would freshen up, brush his teeth at about 5 or 5.30 in the morning, and he would get ready to go out on his morning walk. So he would walk for about an hour. Then he would come back, he would greet the deities, receive Guru Puja, give his Bhagavatam class. Then he would go back to his quarters, have his breakfast. He would sit for about 20 minutes after eating, maybe chant a couple of rounds. Or he might talk with some of his managers, just briefly. Then he would take a 1 hour rest. Then, after rising up, usually if there was some person that wanted to see Srila Prabhupada, they would be booked in the morning time, around about 10:30. That was always a good time. If there were no guests, then Prabhupada would sometimes call the secretary in, and he would receive the day's mail. What that meant, of course, was that the secretary would open up the letters, he would read them out to Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada would hear, and he would dictate a reply. The secretary would write down notes, he would go off, he would type them up during the day. Then in the evening time, when we were taking rest, the secretary would leave all the day's letters, all duly typed out, on Prabhupada's desk. He would read through them and then sign them, and then the secretary would pick them up in the morning and they'd be mailed out. Prabhupada was very efficient about that. Sometimes Prabhupada sometimes would correct things or add things that, you know, he had not dictated, and then later on wanted to add something. But it was a fairly efficient system. Prabhupada was very prompt about replying his mail. He never left anything for more than a day or two. And in this way, he was usually doing about 5 or 6 letters a day, because in those days, that was a lot of mail. Prabhupada probably answered about 6,000 or 7,000 letters during, you know, the period of ISKCON that he was with us, you know, from 66 up till about 77. Nowadays, you know, it's possible to if you're a manager, you might receive 50 or 100 emails a day, yeah, which is very difficult. But Prabhupada knew how to pace himself. Anyway, so he would answer the mail. He would then have his midday massage. That was usually from 11:30 until 1 o'clock. More often he would actually do his mail whilst he was having his massage. But sometimes he liked to just sit very quietly. And we often had the experience that when you were massaging Srila Prabhupada, he seemed to kind of like park his body, like you would leave your car at the garage, for fixing up or whatever, and then go off somewhere and then come back. And sometimes when I massage Prabhupada at the end, I would finish, and then a few seconds would go by, and then Prabhupada would open his eyes and we say finished. He was the one that was receiving the massage. You would think, obviously he would know that, but sometimes he would ask, finished? And then he would go off and take his bath. So after his bath, then, of course, he would put on fresh cloth, chant his Gayatri mantra, then he would have his lunch. And when I was with Prabhupada, we fixed the lunch time at 1:30 so that it was regular. Sometimes previous to that, the lunch time was kind of a bit flexible, and it would just be the cook would try to have it ready in time for when Prabhupada had finished bathing and dressing, and then whatever time that was, they would have the lunch brought in. But I found it was more convenient for Prabhupada also to know that there was a fixed time. So if we were a little early, then he would not be expecting to be fed immediately. He knew 1:30. This is actually coming up. Well, we may not get to this point in this series, so I'll say it now. But the one time when I saw Srila Prabhupada get really angry with one of his lady disciples, I observed that he never chastised the women, practically, never. The men, we would get it, but the women, not. But one time, there was one occasion when we were in Calcutta in 1977. Palika was the cook, and for some reason or another, she didn't have Prabhupada's prasadam ready at 1:30. And then it got to 25 to 2 and 20 to 2, and Prabhupada rang the bell, and he was very agitated, and he said, "Go and bring her here," like this. So I went and I brought Palika in, and Prabhupada really blasted her. I mean, he really was angry. And of course she was apologetic. Something had happened for some reason. She didn't have things ready. And then at the end, after Prabhupada had made his point, then he told her, he said, "The thing is this, that when the appetite comes up, it must be fed. So when you know when your lunch is, your psychology, your body responds to that. So you're thinking at 1:30 I'll eat. So you don't think about 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, but at 1:30, as soon as you start thinking you're going to eat, the juices start flowing and you're ready for it, And if you don't get it, it causes actual problems." And Prabhupada's digestion was so delicate that, just a slight irregularity in the standard of the prasadam or the timing of the prasadam would definitely cause problems for him. So that was one little lesson that I learned. That, in matter of eating, you have to be regular. Otherwise, it causes problems. And anybody that's been traveling, like I'm on a tour now, the most difficult thing about traveling is eating. Even if you get really good prasadam, it doesn't matter. The timings are all different. The type of prasadam is a little different. And, you're always moving around in different time zones. So that causes a lot of problems. Because when you're young, you can, as they say, you can digest stones. But when you get older, you really have to be careful about what you eat and when you eat. So anyway, Prabhupada would eat at 1:30 every day. Then he would sit in his darshan room for maybe 20 minutes, a half an hour. Again, he'd chant a few rounds. And then he would take an afternoon rest about maybe 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock or a little later. So then in the afternoons about 4 o'clock, especially when we were in India, the doors would be opened and then so many people would come for this darshan. So this is in particular reference to that. This was November 25th, 1975. Prabhupada had just arrived in Delhi. He had come up there with Hari Kesh, who was transcribing his Bhagavatam tapes and cooking for him. Hansa Dutta had flown in from Europe to be Prabhupada's new secretary for the month, and there was no servant at that time. It was a very unusual situation. Prabhupada, you know, had an established party, at least a servant and a secretary. That way then the servant would take care of all of his personal needs. He would get a massage twice a day, and then the secretary would take care of, you know, the correspondence, the travel arrangements, visitors and all these kinds of things. So when Prabhupada came up to Delhi, he had just been in Bombay, and before that he'd been to Africa, South Africa and then East Africa. So somehow or another, the servants that he had were not available. He had come back from Africa, there were problems there. So as soon as he arrived back in Bombay in early November, he gave sannyas to Navi Yogendra, who had been his servant for a short period up to that point, and also to Nanda Kumar. Nanda Kumar was the one of the early servants. In fact, on Prabhupada's visit in 1972 to Sydney and Melbourne, Nanda Kumar was his servant, so he was one of the early ones. Later on he had some problems. He was kind of drifting around a little bit. So in November of 1975, he suddenly turned up in Bombay. And then Prabhupada had been informed that he was doing some business, apparently selling or buying and selling herbs. enough said. So he came to see Prabhupada. Prabhupada asked him, what are you doing? So he said, you know, selling Ayurvedic medicines like this. Prabhupada said, if you do this business, you will go to hell. He was very heavy with it. So Nanda was very shocked. He said, well, Prabhupada, what should I do? So Prabhupada said, take sannyas. So he did. So Prabhupada gave him and Navi Yogendra sannyas. They were sent with Brahmananda, who had been the secretary up to that point, to Africa to try to sort out the difficulties there. So when Prabhupada came up to Delhi, there was nobody there as the servant. However, in his prior visit to Vrindavan during Janmashtami and Radhashtami, he had arrived with quite a large party. Upendra Prabhu and Nitai Das were both on the party, as well as Harikesh and Brahmananda. When they left, Nitai and Upendra remained behind in Vrindavan. Upendra was supposed to go to Fiji, so he was waiting for them to send him a ticket. And Nitai Das, he had decided that he wanted to work on developing the Gurukul there and also take charge of the deity department, because it was, you know, the first big scale worship that was going on in our movement, in the first custom built temple. So he was supposed to be a Sanskritist. He had some idea about Hari Bhakti Vilas and this one and that one. So the two of them stayed behind. So that's the scenario. Prabhupada, you know, comes up to Delhi. Two former servants have just been sent to Africa. And then the two servants, former servants that were in Vrindavan, were also, for various reasons, not available. Upendra came in on the 25th. He massaged Prabhupada for 2 days. And then he was on his way to Fiji. He actually finally got his ticket. So he was on his way out. And Nitai also came in on the 25th. But he was not available because he had a problem with his visa. So he had to immediately go down to Bombay, and that was going to take a couple of weeks to sort out. So out of four former servants that were in India at the time, none of them were available. And I just happened to come into Delhi on the same day on some personal business. Gopal Krishna Maharaj now, at that time he was a married man. He was the GBC, so he saw me there and he grabbed me and said, all right, Hari Sori, you can be Prabhupada's door guard. But Prabhupada wasn't staying in the temple at that time. We had a tiny, tiny little place, 19 Toddle Mill Lane in Bengali Markets. Any Delhi Wallahs from here? Yeah, you know Bengali Markets?
Yes.
Yes. So there's a little laneway there. cut off by the railway line at the end. Todimal Lane. So we had a little place there. The Radha Parita Sarathi was there. But there was practically no room for anything. So Prabhupada was staying further down the road in a small flat that had been rented by Tejas Prabhu, who was the temple president. So even there, people were coming for darshan in the afternoon. The word was out. A few people came. And somehow or another, Gopal thought, you know, there should be a door guard. And when he asked me that, you know, don't go back. I was going to go back to Vrindavan the same day. But he said, no, stay here for a couple of days whilst Prabhupada's here, and you can be the door guard. And I have to say that at the time, I really thought that why, you know, does Prabhupada need a door guard in Delhi? You know, maybe in New York or, you know, some dangerous place, but hardly Delhi. At the same time, I was also thinking, this is great, you know. I can sit outside Prabhupada's door all day long. I'm bound to see him coming in and out. And, you know, there's the darshan in the afternoon. I can attend all the darshans. So that was the scene then, November 25th. So during the afternoon darshan, Prabhupada had me stand at the door to distribute sweets to each guest as they departed. Prabhupada was insistent that every visitor must receive some prasadam. Because there are no devotees available to prepare the sweets, Prabhupada has given Tejas permission to buy them from the Bengali sweet shop on the corner. He said those sweets may even be offered to the deities because they are cooked with pure ingredients. So there was just at the beginning of the road, there was a Bengali sweet shop. And, you know, the Bengalis are famous for their rasgullas and sandeshes and so many other things, hundreds of things that they make. And the Delhi temple at that time really comprised of about four people. Tejas and his wife, Tribhuvanath Prabhu was there from England. He was the lone Western Brahmachari. There was Omkara and his wife who were the Pujaris. And I think there was one Indian devotee, Brahmachari. And that was the whole yatra in Delhi. So they just couldn't do everything, and they had full-on deity worship going on as well. So Prabhupada allowed them. Apparently the people from the Bengali sweet shop had come on occasion and, you know, made presentations to Prabhupada of some sweets and things. And so he, you know, told the devotees, you can offer these to the deity. So that's what we had. I had a big jar. Prabhupada was very, very particular about this, that every single person that came to the temple must receive prasadam. Yeah? And he would become very upset if that was not done. So it's such an important thing. Because he knew, whatever you'll speak, it will go in this ear and out the other. But if you give them some prasadam, that's practical purification. Very powerful. So that was my first duty then. The next day then I was asked to begin massaging Srila Prabhupada. That's a long story, we won't go into that one now. But every afternoon then, as long as he was in Delhi, which was about 4 days, that's what I was doing. I was sitting at the door giving out sweets. Then from there we went to Kurukshetra for a day, then we came to Vrindavan on the 2nd of December. And then I was given the full servant's duties at that time. I moved into Prabhupada's rooms. And then again, the same thing. That was one of my daily duties during the afternoon, was to sit at the door and make sure that everybody that came in or out got a sweet. So this was December the 5th, 1975 in Vrindavan. I was posted at the door to give out pera, a milk sweet that is a Vrindavan specialty. Prabhupada is particularly insistent that all visitors receive some Krishna prasadam, a tangible offering for their spiritual advancement. A discussion of philosophy may be easily forgotten, but prasadam will always act to purify. Prasadam distribution is also in accordance with Vedic etiquette, that a guest must always be offered a place to sit, a little refreshment, no matter who he may be. Thus, as always, Prabhupada was the perfect host. So that was the other side of it. That's just culture. Yeah, if you want to honor a guest, you immediately give them a glass of water and something to eat and a place to sit. That's the minimum. Even your enemies in Vedic culture, they have to be, you know, greeted as a guest, honored guest, if they come to your door. So Prabhupada, you know, was a perfectly cultured person, and this distribution of prasadam was a very important part of his scheme. Okay, so a little later on then, Prabhupada went to Mayapur, January 17, 1976. We stayed there for just over 2 months, up through the Gaupurnima festival and a few days afterwards. So by mid-March, the Mayapur temple was crowded out. About 600 devotees had come for the Gaupurnima festival. It was the biggest festival up until that point. In those days we used to get at least 300 devotees from America, then, you know, another 100 maybe from Europe, from Australia. We used to at least 30, 35 devotees, and everybody would travel in groups. So building up for the festival then on March the 12th, Prabhupada, you know, was giving his afternoon darshans, and they were becoming filled up, you know, with our Sankirtan devotees from the West. So the devotees, this is March the 12th, devotees crowd into Prabhupada's room early in the evenings, eager to get as much association with his divine grace as possible. Many of them have worked hard all year round, selling books and doing other temple duties, and their visit to the Holy Dham, and especially the opportunity to see Srila Prabhupada, makes it all worthwhile. You have to kind of put yourself in the picture, just like we were here in Australia. So there was no internet in those days, and there was very little information that used to come out about Srila Prabhupada's travels on a daily basis. You know, nowadays you can go on Facebook or some other thing and you can see, you know, exactly where your guru is to the minute practically. Yeah, and it's updated every day. But when Prabhupada was traveling, we would sometimes get a newsletter, and that would be stuck on the notice board. You know, 2 months ago, Prabhupada was visiting this place, and he met this person, and he said this. And that was about it. We really didn't know that much. So when Prabhupada came, he would come Australia. His Australian visits were usually 1 week. So that was it. If you didn't go to India, you would see Prabhupada 1 week in a year, and that, you know, that was that was sufficient to keep you going the rest of the year. But obviously the more you could see him, the better it was. So the devotees that went to India for the Gaupurnima festival, they discovered, you know, that they would, you know, see Prabhupada for 2 or 3 weeks. You could get into his room. You know, it wasn't as regulated as it was in the West. I remember in the first few years that Prabhupada came to Australia, you couldn't go on a morning walk unless you were picked. Yeah, so maybe 10 devotees will be told, okay, you can go, you know, Monday, you can go on Tuesday, like that. And, you know, it was kind of fairly well regulated. And we would have one darshan, open darshan, on the last day that Prabhupada was here. And everybody would be allowed, you know, to cram into his rooms. India was a whole different realm altogether. And of course, so all the devotees coming from the West, they discovered that they could go into Prabhupada's room every afternoon and just sit with him for an hour or two. So it was very, very nice. So this evening was no exception. The atmosphere could not have been more congenial. Prabhupada was very relaxed and enjoyed the company of his faithful disciples. He is always aware and deeply appreciative of the sacrifices that they are making on his behalf. Although he is our spiritual master, our instructor in every aspect of life, his dealings with us are full of respect and compassion. A few minutes with Srila Prabhupada can change anyone's life. Someone brought in some sweets to be handed out, so I put them to one side. Srila Prabhupada glanced over, concerned as ever that his guest receive a little prasadam. Oh, you were not distributing? I was sitting there, I thought, there's so many devotees in, I'll wait until the end. So I just put these sweets next to me. Prabhupada was talking, but he, somehow or another, he always knew everything that was going on. So he saw me out one corner of his eye. So, oh, you are not distributing? Well, there are so many devotees, I told him. I thought I'd give out the sweets when everybody was leaving. They will never leave, Prabhupada said. He was laughing and all the devotees cheered. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Even a few simple words from him are enough to completely capture everybody's hearts. So, that was nice. I'm not sure whether I've got this in here, but there was another little episode that we had whilst we were in Mayapur during that visit. There was a little boy from Australia. His name was Damodar. So he was about 3 years old. He had a very large head and a little blonde seeker. He was a very amusing kid, very funny. So he would come in and he would just sit in Prabhupada's room, and Prabhupada would just let him come in and out as he liked. And he came in one afternoon, and Prabhupada always kept this big glass jar filled with Lugloos, I think it was, or maybe gulab jumps, anyway, some big sweet. And Damodar would come in and he would sit there, and then he would be looking at the jar, and then he would look at Prabhupada, and then he would look at the jar, and Prabhupada would smile, and they'd say, alright, give him one. And then he would have it, and then he would go out. And he had this habit, he would he'd seen it, the devotees do it, but he would put the sweet in his mouth, and then he would bring his hand up on reset and wipe his hand on his seeker. And it was very funny. So this particular afternoon, he came in, and because previously Prabhupada always said to give him a sweet, so I opened the jar up and I gave him a sweet. So he ate that, and then he looked again. So, okay, he wants another one, so I gave him another one. So he ate that, and then he looked again. I gave him another one. So like this, I just thought, well, you know, he's hungry. I didn't have any common sense, so I just kept on feeding him these sweets. So, I mean, these were big, you know. And we got to six. He's just, you know, popping them down like anything. And then Prabhupada was talking to somebody else, and he was watching me. And he said, what are you doing? He's just a little boy, you know. Oh, okay. I had no experience in dealing with children at that time. Anyway, so Damodar popped about six of these gulabs straight down. It's very funny. Okay, so December the 25th, 1975, Prabhupada flew to Ahmedabad in Gujarat. And then from there we drove to a place called Sanand. It's a small town of about 20,000 people. Anybody from Gujarat? Yeah? You know Sanand? Sanand now has become famous in India as the place where they manufacture the Nano, the Tata Nano, the cheapest car in the world. It's in Sanand. Sanand. We have the same problem. Yeah, you can't understand what I say, and I can't understand what you say. Anyway, somehow or another. Sanand. We were in Sanand. And there was the king of Sanand. He was a nice man. He was in the habit of inviting saintly persons to come and speak. And they would stay at the Sanand Palace, which in reality, although, you know, we use the word palace, it was a three-story red brick building. That was it. But in Sanand, it looked very impressive. So they had arranged for these pandals for 5 days. Prabhupada would speak in... Actually, they arranged for morning and evening. The only devotees that were there was Yasamati Nandan, who's still there. He's the temple president in Ahmedabad. They were just getting set up with ISKCON in Ahmedabad at that time. And I think Hai Haya, he was a Mexican devotee, and his wife, they were visiting. And that was really all the devotees that were there at that time. So Yasamati Nandan has arranged for a large pandal tent to be erected and programs to be held for the next 5 days. At 8:30 p.m., Srila Prabhupada went there to lecture. About 5,000 people turned out, which was impressive for a town with a population of only 21,000. After a brief kirtan, Prabhupada gave a well-received 50-minute discourse in Hindi, which Yasamati Nandan translated into Gujarati. On the way out of the Pandal area, Prabhupada stopped the car at the entrance and he inquired whether all the visitors were being given prasadam. So, you know, we just had this big program. Prabhupada spoke for nearly an hour. I had kirtan. Then we got in the car and started driving out. And this was what Prabhupada was thinking of. These 5,000 people that have come, did they get prasadam? So he actually had the car stopped at the entrance to the Pandal area and made an inquiry, what prasadam are you giving out? So he was shown some small white sugar beads, which are commonly given out at many temples. What do they call that? Huh? What is it? What's the name for that? Little, like frothy, crystallized sugar balls? Tiny. What do they call that? Just misery. Alright. Misery means generally, though, that means rock candy. This is a little different, you know, it's just... Huh? It looks like puffed rice, but it's sugar. Anyway, you know what I mean. So, that's what they were giving out. Prabhupada wasn't very impressed, but he seemed to think that it was better than nothing. He didn't push the devotees too much because there was only 3 or 4 of them there, so, you know, it was difficult. So we arrived back at the palace at about 10:30 p.m. So then the next morning, December the 26th, 1975, Prabhupada decided that he would go and walk in the fields, because he always took his morning walk for an hour. And as we walked, all the fields were covered in tobacco, tobacco plants. So they were into cash cropping, and they'd switched over all their agricultural efforts to growing tobacco. So Prabhupada was talking about cash crops and the foolishness, you know, the whole concept that you have land where you can buy, you can grow your own food, and instead of doing that, you grow some so-called cash crop. You send that to some market, you know, maybe hundreds of thousands of miles away. You have no control over the price of it. You know, it could be high or low, depending on, you know, so many other people that are manipulating the markets. You get your money back, and then you go out and buy the food that you could have grown on the land in the first place. So what's the point? So anyway, Prabhupada wasn't very impressed with the idea of cash crops. But that also brought up the question of prasadam distribution at the programs. Prabhupada is very keen to see that sumptuous prasadam is given out whenever we hold a gathering. He said that otherwise, ordinary people will not be attracted. Although lecturing strongly every day, he is aware that whatever he says inevitably will go over the heads of most people. Therefore, he told the devotees, "So then you accept this program, distribution of prasadam. Then we can go everywhere, whole day, when we have a program, kirtan, and prasadam distribution. Simply dry philosophy, what will people understand?" Prabhupada's talking about his own preaching there. Simply dry philosophy. But that's the way that it appears, you know, to an ordinary person that's not philosophically tuned in. So, kirtan and prasadam, that's the main business. So, whilst we were there actually in Sanand, we did some other programs. There was another village called, a town called Bavala, and one or two other places. We did some afternoon programs there. And Prabhupada got very fired up, because in the 1950s, he had had a plan when he was living in Jhansi that he would go all around India on a bullock cart and with a few brahmacharis. He wanted to gather up a small preaching force and just go from one village to the next doing kirtan and prasadam distribution. That was his plan. Somehow or another, it didn't happen. But when we arrived there in Sanand, And we did these village programs, and there was huge turnouts. Practically the whole population was coming. And Prabhupada got very enlivened by the whole thing. And he was telling us how he'd had this plan in the 1950s, but somehow or another it didn't happen. So he said, but now he said, I can do it through you American boys and girls. So Hazarduta was there, and he actually became so inspired by Prabhupada being inspired, that at the end of his 1 month as the secretary, he then went back to Germany, bought two buses, and then drove them overland back to India, and he spent the next couple of years just doing this village-to-village preaching, prasadam distribution and kirtan, and it was very, very successful. Anyway, so bullock cart preaching, there was, of course, sometimes we associate that with Lokanath Maharaj. Everybody knows, you know, he's the Padayatra man. He's been doing that since 1976. He first started his bullock cart preaching program in late, I think, September, October of 76. But there was actually another bullock cart preaching program that happened before that in 1975. So this is December 17th, 1975. Prabhupada received a letter from Mahamsa Swami, who was in Hyderabad, giving a progress report on the temple construction. The new temple is steadily being built. Work has now begun on raising the dome. The project is costing 75,000 rupees a month, which the devotees are collecting throughout South India. That was a lot of money, 75,000 a month. In those days, you could say 10 times the value now, so that would be like 7.5 lakhs now every month. So Mahamsa also reported on four small books: Shrisha Upanishad, Raja Bidya, Perfection of Yoga, and Matchless Gifts, that have now been translated into Telugu. Prabhupada was most happy to hear about a small bullock cart traveling Sankirtan party. Mahamsa wrote, "The bullock cart party, only three devotees, were very successful on their second attempt. They collected lots of rice, distributed prasadam and small literatures, held evening programs, and they are sleeping under a different tree every day. They are thrilled and so enthusiastic. They love this kind of preaching work. Now I am giving them a portable sound system and more equipment and one more devotee, and sending them immediately on a massive journey on bullock cart all the way to the Mayapur festival." So that's, I think that was about Hyderabad to Mayapur. What was that? About 1700 kilometers or something. Is that right? Yeah. Long way. So they were setting off and going, you know, one village at a time all the way up on a bullock cart to Mayapur. And they actually made it just the day before the festival. They pulled in through the front gates. So Prabhupada replied enthusiastically, "Naturally, the Sankirtan men traveling with the bullock carts are blissful. It is Lord Chaitanya's engagement. Lord Chaitanya personally traveled all over India for 6 years. His program was simply kirtan and prasadam distribution. Lord Chaitanya never spoke philosophy in public. When he met big scholars like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he spoke philosophy. Otherwise, for the mass of people, kirtan and prasadam distribution. So continue this program. It is very pleasing to Lord Chaitanya." So Prabhupada was always very enthusiastic about that bullock cart traveling Sankirtan program. Then I think there's some other examples that will come up in a minute. Okay, so entertaining guests is always centered around eating. Even, you know, nowadays you have a business engagement, you have any meeting with somebody important, you know, people do it over a meal. They have a business lunch. They even give tax breaks, you know, for your business lunches and things like that. So everybody knows that exchange, eating together, is a way of developing intimacy in a relationship. Yeah, just like in India, when our devotees first went there, if we went to visit other temples or if we had a function, they would never accept our prasadam. Yeah, especially in Vrindavan. The devotees were there, they would have Janmashtami or some other festival. They would invite some of the local Goswamis and, you know, Mahants. And even if they managed to, you know, decide to come, many of them wouldn't even come. But even the ones that come out of politeness, you know, to Srila Prabhupada, still when we offered them prasadam, oh, no, that's all right. They would never take our prasad. Why? Because it's cooked by malachas and yavanas. That's all. Yeah? And so, nowadays, they're very happy, you know, to take. But in those days, that was one way of letting us know that you are not Vaishnavas. We don't take your so-called prasadam. It's not prasadam. Yeah? What's that? Kacha? Something. What do they call it? In Hindi, there's a word for something that's not... that's rejected, not kacha, something similar to that. Anyway, so, you know, there's an etiquette. When Vishvambhar Goswami from the Radharaman temple, when he came to one of our functions, and he actually accepted some prasadam from our devotees, because he was the leading Goswami in Vrindavan at that time. Radharaman temple has always been like that. He had also been a mayor of Vrindavan. So when he accepted, then gradually all the other Goswamis began to accept prasadam from Krishna Balaram Mandir. But up until he did, it was difficult. Anyway, so there's a, you know, there's a psychology behind establishing relationships with people through the medium of eating. If you eat together, you become friends. That's it. It's just, you know, same with animals. If you want to capture an animal and tame it, you do that by controlling its eating. Yeah? Once it understands it's dependent on you for its food, it becomes passive. Yeah? Even a tiger or an elephant, you know, a lion, once they know that the only place they can get their food is from you, then they, you know, immediately become obedient. So it's the science. So one time I saw, Prabhupada was very expert at entertaining guests. He knew exactly how to set the mood and how to cultivate people through this medium of eating. So one example was Mr. Chowdhury. We met him actually at the airport. It might have been Bombay Airport or Delhi Airport. And he came over, he saw Srila Prabhupada, he began chatting with him, and it turned out that he worked in the land department of Writers Building in Calcutta. Writers Building is the secretariat for the West Bengal government. Of course, in the old days, in the days of the British Raj, when Calcutta was the capital city for the British Raj, then Writers Building was their main, you know, place for the bureaucracy to go on. It's still used today. It's still the central government. So this man was working in the lands department, and he had quite a big position there. So Prabhupada had just, you know, developed this idea of applying to the government to get some land acquired for the purpose of building our Mayapur temple, and he had a scheme. He wanted to get 300 acres of land acquired by the government so that we could build the temple of the Vedic Planetarium. Because in India, especially in those days, now it's slackening off a bit, but it's still law. There's a Land Ceiling Act. Nobody can own more than 24 acres of land. Yeah? So if you want to do some bigger scheme, you have to get special permission from the government. So Prabhupada wanted 300 acres in ISKCON's name. We already had 24 acres, but we needed much more. So this man just met Prabhupada in the airport. Prabhupada realized who he was. And so he then immediately invited him, you know, when I come back to Mayapur, you please come out there and see us. So on the 27th of December, this was just after we met him whilst we were still in Sanand, Gujarat. During mail time, as Prabhupada relaxed on the roof, He dictated a letter to Jayaprataka Swami in Mayapur. He enclosed an introductory letter for him to meet Mr. Chowdhury, the gentleman that we met at the airport. Seeing that meeting as Krishna's arrangement, Prabhupada requested Jayaprataka to visit him personally with prasadam and flowers and invite him to come to Mayapur. He wants Jayaprataka to enlist his help in getting the government to acquire the land for our ISKCON Mayapur development scheme. He also suggested that Mr. Chowdhury might be able to help with Jayaprataka Maharaj's application for Indian citizenship. So at that time he was just going through the process of trying to become an Indian citizen. So February the 1st, so this is a couple of months later, we were in Mayapur, and there'd been this communication. Jayaprataka Maharaj went to see Mr. Chowdhury. He was very friendly, and so he agreed to come out and see Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur. So that was February the 1st. As promised, Mr. Chowdhury and his family arrived. Prabhupada happily received him like a father receiving a son. Prabhupada showed him the plans for the Vedic city and the land that he wants the government to acquire for the project. Then with Jayaprataka Swami, he was taken over the entire compound. So Maharaj took him out, showed him around. Mr. Chowdhury promised to help Jayaprataka Maharaj in every way possible to get the application approved. He clearly has the highest regard for Srila Prabhupada and was impressed with the Mayapur project. His wife was even more enthusiastic, and she challenged her husband that if he is truly a Hindu, then he must help Srila Prabhupada. So that was very nice. Mr. and Mrs. Chowdhury took lunch on the balcony. As we served them sumptuous prasadam, Prabhupada sat to the side in a chair, hosting them graciously. While they ate, he kept up a conversation, light and jolly, thus allowing them to eat without any distraction. So there's a whole system there for serving out. Yeah, if you come in and you're really heavy, and if you disturb somebody whilst they're eating, then you can't digest. It spoils your whole appetite. Your mind becomes disturbed. So the art of serving is to keep the person that you're serving very happy. You keep them in a jolly mood, very light conversation just to entertain them. But nothing heavy, no heavy problems, managerial stuff. No, you sit down, you eat, you have a peaceful mind, then you digest properly. So Prabhupada was very expert in doing that kind of entertainment. So another person that Prabhupada entertained in the same way was Alan Coleman. Does anybody know who Alan Coleman was? I don't know whether he's still alive now, but Aniruddha Prabhu. Cast your mind back to 1966. The first record album that was ever made. The Happening album. Alan Coleman was the producer of that album. And he owned the rights to it. That was the first official Hare Krishna record. And of course that's the one that the Beatles got eventually. George Harrison listened to it all the time. And that was what got him into chanting. Alan Coleman was the man who produced that album. So it was interesting to see him now, 10 years, almost 10 years afterwards. He suddenly turned up in New Delhi on March the 25th. So we left Mayapur. We had a couple of days in Calcutta. From there we came to Delhi. And we were staying at the house of Lakshman Agarwal, who was the owner of the Lakshman Sylvania light bulb company. I'm not sure, are they still around nowadays, those guys? Yeah. Anyway, he owned that company. And he had a nice house in Chanakyapuri. So Prabhupada was staying there for a couple of days, and there was a little pandal that had been set up by Mr. Agarwal. So we got an unexpected visitor in the afternoon, Alan Coleman from New York. He produced Prabhupada's first Hare Krishna record in 1966. He arrived with a lady friend, and at long last he gave Prabhupada his royalties from the record sales. So that was 10 years later he finally got it together. So they amounted to about 1,70,000 rupees. That's 170,000 rupees. To which he added a personal donation of another $2,000. Yeah, so it was nice. 1,70,000 in those days was, I think 1 lakh was about $10,000. So what's that, about $17,000. Yeah. So he gave another $2,000 of his own money as a personal donation. So although he's not a devotee, it was obvious that he had great admiration and respect for Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, in turn, was very happy to see him, greeting him as an old friend. He had his guests sit in his room whilst we fed them sumptuous prasadam. As they ate, Prabhupada chatted very amicably with them and would not let them go until they had eaten everything. We all know that one. The Westerners, when you know we go first time to India, and you know we're sat down and fed, because that's the Indian tradition. The Matajis, they like to feed you, and they won't stop. And even if you put your hands over the plate, they're slipping underneath. You know? and if you don't know, you know, the right kind of mood, it's very difficult to stop them from feeding you. You know, and you end up, you know, bloated like a whale or something. So, Prabhupada, he got Alan, and he wouldn't let them stop until they'd finished everything on the plate. So he really filled them up. So, he smiled brightly all the while, clearly delighting his guests. He is expert at entertaining and encouraging people to increase their devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Just as a side note there, I remember the first time that I had that experience was actually on an Indian boat that had pulled into the docks in Sydney. I just joined the temple in February 1972, and a couple of months later, Madhavisa came in May, and somehow or another, some Indian sailors were walking around. They saw us doing Sankirtan, so they got very, you know, excited. Westerners, you know, dressed as Vaishnavas, chanting in the streets. So they insisted we should come to their boat and do a program. So we went to the docks. Madhavisa was there. Of course, he was a bit of a, in those days, a veteran of India. He had been there for 2 years. Nearly 2 years. So he was a veteran. So he knew the whole system. So after the program, we chanted and he talked a little bit. Then they insisted, now you have to eat. Alright, we sat down to eat. And of course, you know, we were new brahmacharis in those days. And, you know, we were suffering from sensory deprivation. We just moved into the temple. You know, we'd given up, you know, eating all the things we used to eat and, you know, drinking and smoking and, you know, so many other things. So our one real sense gratification, which was allowed, was eating, you know, prasadam. So, you know, we're all young men, 20, 21 years old. And so we had big appetites, which, you know, delighted the crew on the boat. So we sat down, and Madhavisa, he knew the whole system. So, you know, he had like a little sabji, and I remember they had these big puris, and they were coming around, and as soon as they saw a little, oh, take more, take more. And, you know, we were eating and eating, and then I saw Madhavisa slip out. We were still there, so he left us to it. He slipped out the side. He knew what was happening. He just had a little bit and off he went. And so we sat there and we could not leave. You know, they wouldn't let us go. No, 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 you have to eat more. There's more, there's more. And they kept heaping it up and heaping it up. And no, please, no. But we didn't know how to say no. It's just like, no, no. And as long as they've got you at their mercy, you know, they just keep on coming. So I remember coming back, I was stuffed for about 2 days afterwards. I could hardly eat anything. Anyway, nowadays I know how to say no, but... So Prabhupada was doing this with Alan Coleman. Now another celebrity, or another person that was well known, was George Harrison, as I just mentioned. he had been introduced to Krishna, chanting of Hare Krishna through Alan Coleman's record. Later on, as we know, he became a very, you know, involved devotee of Srila Prabhupada's. So he had his last meeting with Srila Prabhupada in July of 1976. Prabhupada was just coming to the tail end of his last world tour. We had come here to Melbourne in April, then we went to New Zealand, then Fiji, then Hawaii, then mainland America, and then we ended up in New York. We had the first Rath Yatra there on July 18th. And then on the 20th, we flew to London. Unfortunately, when we left New York, Prabhupada had developed a heavy cold. It was almost like a flu. And the GBCs had come to him on the last day and pleaded with him to stay in New York until he got better. But Prabhupada insisted, no, I have to go because they've probably set up some programs, so I should go. So on the flight over, it was a night flight, and Prabhupada was just coughing up this really heavy, you know, mucus every few minutes. He was lying down, he couldn't sleep, he was just coughing up and coughing up. And in fact, when we arrived in London, he requested Gurudas Maharaj, who was with us, to go and get a wheelchair for him to get off the plane. And for Prabhupada to do that, it meant it was really serious. Because he was a, you know, he was a determined, very self-sufficient personality. Although, of course, he allowed us to serve him in various ways. But for something like this, for him to ask for a wheelchair, it meant that it was really serious. He was a bit delayed in coming or getting it arranged. Prabhupada didn't want to sit on the plane. So he stood up and he got off and he started walking. And those of you who have been through Heathrow, you'll know, you know, the corridors there are really long. And so we started walking. After about 100 meters or so, Gurudas Maharaj came running up and he said, Srila Prabhupada, you know, I've got the wheelchair, but they won't allow me to bring it to you. You have to go back to the aeroplane and get on the wheelchair at the aeroplane. Prabhupada just shook his head. He didn't say anything. He kept on walking. And just some strange rule that they have. And as he was walking, he was swaying from side to side. He was so dizzy. They actually had two policemen that came behind us as a kind of escort. They were walking about 10 yards behind just to keep their eye on things, just in case there was some kind of an emergency. So, anyway, one funny incident. When we came to the immigration, I had a British passport, so it wasn't a problem. Srila Prabhupada sat to one side, the policeman stood next to him, and I took Prabhupada's passport to the immigration counter. And he had kind of three sections, you know, over the years he'd filled them up, and they were, you know, they were, it was very thick. So I knew where Prabhupada's British visa was. So I handed the passport over and I told the fellow, who was a young guy, probably about the same age as me, 24 or 25. And I told him, I said, the visa is in the old section, it's just here. So he deliberately took the passport, put it down, you know, face down, and started going from the back at the opposite end to that I told him. And one by one, very slowly, looking at each page, he was, you know, trying to show me he was the boss. So I took the passport back off him. I opened it up at the visa and I put it down. I said, the visa's there. And he got so agitated. He grabbed his rubber stamp. He stuck it in my face. He said, here, why don't you stamp it too? Go on, stamp it. This is an immigration officer. And I looked over. Prabhupada's just sitting there, not saying anything. And the cops were looking at the immigration official. You know, do it. And so he kind of settled back down again. He stamped Prabhupada's passport. And then as he hands it back to me, he says, here, isn't he the bloke that wrote the Bhagavad Gita? I was completely shocked. I was stunned. I was thinking, how does a demon like this know about my brought the Bhagavad Gita? So I said, how did you know? He said, I bought one on Oxford Street. So sometime or other, he bought a Bhagavad Gita, and he'd actually looked at it, and he recognized Srila Prabhupada from his photograph in the Bhagavad Gita. I was amazed. So I thought, well, there's still a chance for him to redeem himself. So I said, well, he's going to be speaking on the Bhagavad Gita at our place at Lechmore Heath near Watford, so, you know, please come out. All right. I don't know whether he actually did, but anyway, so we got through, but Prabhupada was really sick. On the way to Bhaktivedanta Manor, we had to stop the car twice. He vomited, but everything that he vomited was just like this thick, heavy bile and mucus. There was no foodstuffs. And basically, he spent the first 3 or 4 days in bed. So he was very weak. Gradually, he started to recuperate a little bit. And the meeting with George was arranged for July the 26th. So George could only come in the afternoon, which was when Prabhupada usually took his rest. And we had a standing rule that if Prabhupada was asleep, he was not allowed to be woken up for any reason whatsoever. If the Queen of England had walked in unannounced, we would not have woken him up. We would have told her to wait. Prabhupada knew he was coming at a certain time, so he said, if I'm resting, he said, you come in and wake me up. So he wasn't actually resting when George arrived. And I went into the bedroom and I informed him that George was now here. So I thought Prabhupada would get up and then go into the Darshan room, which was quite big at Bhaktivedanta Manor. But Prabhupada said, bring him in. So we brought him into the bedroom. And Prabhupada sat up in the bed. And when he entered, Prabhupada had a seat brought for him and instructed us to feed him prasadam. So all the ladies had been cooking, Bala Gopal, Dana Jayaswar, she was an expert cook. So they made this huge feast for George. And Mukunda was there, Mukunda Maharaj, Gurudas was there. So these were his old friends. And so Prabhupada had him come in, and he immediately sat him down in the bedroom. They brought all the pots of prasadam into the bedroom, and then 2 or 3 tables were set up. And then immediately Prabhupada instructed us to feed him. So George sat down. We had a small table there, and they began serving out. And whilst they did that, Prabhupada engaged him in some light conversation as they ate. All the while, Prabhupada attentively supervised the serving of the prasadam. Noticing which preparations George had a taste for, he told us to give him more. At the same time, he kept him at ease with sweet words. Ah, Hare Krishna. Oh, you give him 2 more samosas. He likes them. Yes, all the boys and girls are so nicely qualified for Krishna's service. George had said, you know, how nicely he thought that everything was going. Bhaktivedanta Manor was being kept up nicely. He said, I see all the devotees seem to be very happy. So Prabhupada agreed with him. Yes, they're all very qualified for Krishna's service. And George expressed pleasure at seeing his old friends. They're looking better and better all the time, he said. It's nice for me to see Gurudas. He's turning into a mountain. It was rather, you know, big. George ate steadily, with Prabhupada ensuring that he had enough. When he offered more samosas, George laughed. I've got plenty, thanks. Prabhupada also laughed. Prasadam, we can eat it up to the neck. There is no harm. You'll never get indigestion. You've got some fruits? Prabhupada continued to encourage him, offering cauliflower, mango drink, and other preparations. Just take a little. George was doing his best, responding warmly to Prabhupada's hospitality. I can't finish, he laughed. He said he had been sick with jaundice recently, and he had turned yellow and his liver had been affected. He thought that he had contracted it from eating Chinese takeaway food. Prabhupada advised him to cook simple foods for himself. As conversations are wont to do, theirs meandered from one subject to another. Prabhupada mentioned about our growing number of Govinda's restaurants, and he asked George if he had met Ambarish. So Ambarish, of course, Alfred Ford. We had just had a meeting with him and Shrutakirti the month previously in Detroit about setting up a new Prasadam restaurant in Boston. So he also filled him in on the successful New York Rathiatra. And Prabhupada told him about the Mayapur project. "We are just attempting a big planetarium in Mayapur," he said. "We have asked the government to acquire some land, 350 acres. So that is negotiation going on. So we shall give a Vedic planetarium." So Prabhupada at that time was really pushing, you know, for us to start the Mayapur Temple of Vedic Planetarium. Now finally, a couple of years ago, we got our act together and we're doing it. So Gurudas furnished some of the details. "The planetarium will be 350 feet high and show the cosmology of the spiritual world." Prabhupada added, "That construction will be like your Washington Capitol, like that." "Oh, a big dome?" George asked. "Yes," Prabhupada said. "Estimated 8 crores of rupees." A lot more nowadays. Then Prabhupada offered him some more dal and fruit. George was grinning as he said, "Oh, very good. Oh, fantastic. Well, maybe just a little bit, but no. Thanks. That's nice. Fine. Okay, now that's fine. Thanks. That's enough. That's fine." Prabhupada smiled. "No, that watermelon, you can give him. It's just water." Prabhupada asked George if he was reading his books at all. George said he was, mainly the Krishna book. "Mukunda has given me the new books, but there's just so much in them, so much to read. I don't know how anybody could have written it. It's difficult enough to read all of that amount." Prabhupada acknowledged his appreciation. "Sometimes they're surprised how one man can write so many books, but it is Krishna's grace," he said humbly. "Otherwise, not possible. For a human being, it is not possible." As they chatted, Prabhupada ensured a steady flow of prasadam. "Prajumya, give him a little. This one here." No, please. George laughed. "I'm really full. I won't have to eat for a few days now." So that was the signal for the finale. "Sweets," Prabhupada said. George smiled and he conceded. "Very well." "No, sweet will help you digest," Prabhupada told him. And to the server he instructed, "Don't give 3, at least 4. With George protesting that he wouldn't be able to eat much more, Prabhupada explained, "3 is given to an enemy. According to our Indian system, then if you give somebody 3, that means that he is an enemy." George was a little surprised. "Oh really? I always liked the number 3. So while waiting to be served some fruit, Prabhupada listed 3 enemies: calm, crowd, and lobe, lust, anger, and greed. "Yes, but there's a lot of nice 3s as well," George said. And Prabhupada agreed. "Yes, just like Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwar. 3 worlds, Sankhya, Marichya, Padma. So a trinity, so these are nice things." George gallantly tackled the sweets. As he downed the last one, he declared, "My compliments to the chef." While we cleared away the small tables and pots, Prabhupada thanked George for coming. "So I'm very much pleased that you've taken so much trouble to come here." So that was it. George left, and Prabhupada didn't see him again personally. But in the last 6 weeks, in October, November, in Vrindavan, in 1977, just before Prabhupada's departure, he called Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who was his secretary, and he told him that, because he had, often people would give Srila Prabhupada things like rings and watches and stuff like that. So there was one very nice ring, and Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Maharaj that, "Now you give this ring to George Harrison." So that was a parting gift. So Prabhupada, even at that moment, was thinking about George. A very important person for the Krishna consciousness movement, and completely won over by prasadam. Okay. What's the program this evening? Are we speaking this evening or not? All right. A work in progress. Okay. Okay, so a final one here. August the 15th, 1976. Prabhupada received a visit from Mrs. Bila. She was a member of the Bila family. We had done a program in December of 75 at the Bila mansion. And then when Prabhupada arrived back from his tour, Mrs. Bila came to see him. So during Prabhupada's lunch, Mrs. Brijratan Mohatta came to visit with four friends. She is a member of the famous Bila family, and her husband has helped power movement in many ways. Prabhupada had us lay out seats and chonkis in his reception room for the whole party. He sat nearby and entertained them with light conversation as they took prasadam. Before they left, we also showed them the film Spiritual Frontier. Anybody know that film? Who's seen Spiritual Frontier? Annie Rudin. That's going way back. Spiritual Frontier made its world premiere in Los Angeles on that last visit there to America. It was a film about New Vrindavan and the development, you know, simple living and high thinking. Yadavara's first kind of major film that he did. It was very well received everywhere, and we used to show that, you know, wherever we went. And it was actually taken by Shravan Ananda. They would tour Bengal. And all the programs in India, people would see it. Now nobody's ever even heard of it. It's on the following Srila Prabhupada DVD set by Yadavara Prabhu. So you can see it there. Well worth a look. It's a little late, 9:10. We'll finish at that point. Next section is how not to entertain your guests. Right? That bit was about how to entertain, and the next one's about how not to. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes. How do you say no? With an air of finality. Yeah. You have to know the art. It's just like, you know, Prabhupada was famous, you know, when he went on his morning walk, sometimes there would be a dog and he would hut, and the dog would immediately go. We would try it. Hut, 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 hut. And the dog would just sit there. But when Prabhupada said it, he had the tone. Hut! That was it. The dog knew. All right, off you go. Yeah. Same thing. Not that I'm comparing the two, but, you know, when they come and they offer, you know, take more, no, no, take more, no, no, I take. You just know. That's it. Know. You have to have the tone. Yeah. If you convey it properly, they understand, all right, he's serious. As soon as they see a little weakness anywhere, right, he's not really serious. You know, keep feeding. Keep piling it up. So you have to develop the verbal intonations. And plus, if you cover it up with your hands, you know, they get the message. Any other questions? Alright, so thank you all very much, and I presume we'll be continuing tonight with the prasadam segment of Prabhupada the Living Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.